morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. A lot going on today, and we have a wonderful group to talk to and find out what's happening, and we're very excited. We hope you are as well. You're here, so maybe you're a little excited. That's good. Let's go and introduce our group. I want to remind you that you can always be a part of our conversation. All you have to do is join us and write to us via email, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, sir.
How are you? Well, I'm good. It's a great morning. It is Ringo Starr's birthday. It's also Roselle Chartok's birthday.
So. Oh, that's exciting. That's exciting. Very good. And has Sharon?
Which part is exciting? The Ringo part or
No. Roselle's. I mean,
Who's older?
It's exciting for Ringo that he shares a birthday with Roselle.
I suppose that's right. I suppose you make a point.
You know, good for. Well, no, it's much more exciting about Roselle because, you know, Ringo was the fourth Beatle. 81 years old today, I believe.
Ringo. Wow.
Ringo's 81.
Yeah, he's
really
a year older than I am.
Okay.
And Roselle's, you know, you're not supposed to give them.
No.
Probably
you're not supposed to say.
Roselle's
like,
a lovely person, is what you're supposed to say.
Yeah.
The love of your life.
And puts up with a lot.
Really? Chris Churchill is here. He is a columnist for the Times Union newspaper and one of our most respected columnists in this region. And if not in all of journalism, and we are thrilled that he joins us every day. Good morning, sir.
Thank you, Joe. I appreciate that.
It's wonderful to have you here as always. Investigative journalist and UAlbany adjunct professor Rosemary Mayo. You're still adjuncting?
Yes.
Okay, good. My information is correct.
Good morning.
Nice to have you here. And last but certainly not least, the Cohoes City Director of Operations, the woman who is single-handedly responsible for
operating
Cohoes.
What an operator.
Not that.
Teresa Bourgeois, good morning. A delight to see you.
Delighted to be here on this beautiful, beautiful day.
Yeah, it is a lovely, lovely day. All right, let's get started, and we'll talk about what's going on in the world and a lot happening. So it's one of those things like, where do you begin? But I think we'll do some of the big stories, but lower hanging fruit here. One is the Eric Adams win. We were talking about this yesterday. Now the Associated Press late yesterday called the Democratic primary for Mr. Adams, who solidified his lead over Catherine Garcia and Maya Wiley after the New York City Board of Elections released additional results on Tuesday evening. Eric Adams, the Brooklyn Borough president, ran as a blue-collar New Yorker, certainly with a law and order background. Garcia is seeking additional clarity on the votes. Is that a recount or not quite?
It means he's suspicious.
Yes. Wants to know a little bit more. Wiley has criticized election officials. And meanwhile, what we know now is that we have a Democratic, seemingly we have a Democratic candidate who will be running against the Republican, Curtis Sliwa, in the fall election.
Read that. But what happened to Giuliani? Wasn't he running also?
He's running for governor.
Oh, for governor.
He's running for governor. Yeah.
Mayor's too small for him. He's going big.
No, that's the big Lee Zeldin,
right.
Giuliani.
What a fight.
Primaries fight that we get to look forward to. So Eric Adams. Well, I was asking your comments on that.
I know I get it.
Yeah, okay.
What's going on here, obviously, is that he is the beneficiary, and I said this yesterday, of the fact that people are scared walking the streets of New York right now and think that, you know, that they could get done in. And here's a former police captain, but he gets it both ways because he's not only a former police captain, but he was a sort of reformer from within the police. He wins, won that way, I think. I think if things weren't so tough in terms of the way things have worked out, he might not have won. But people are really worried about their safety.
Chris Churchill.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, I think it shows the kind of resonance of crime as a political issue. I think you saw the same sort of thing with Governor Cuomo yesterday announcing kind of that he's declaring a state of emergency on guns. I mean, it is an issue that people are concerned about, especially in cities, you know. And I think, you know, one of the interesting things about the Eric Adams race is, and maybe this is something the panel can talk about, is was this a success for ranked choice voting, or was it a kind of a dud for ranked choice voting?
How do you tell?
Well, a part of me thinks that if we had had a runoff election between Eric Adams and Maya Wiley, that would have been a really interesting contest, and it kind of ranked choice voting kind of took that away.
Yeah.
You know, you would have had a progressive against a former police captain, and it would have been an interesting debate about the future of New York, and it would have been, I think, something people really paid attention to. But we didn't get that.
No.
Good point.
Rosemary.
I don't know much about this race, and I'm watching it with interest. I think that he, you mentioned this, Alan, has a double sword here. He won because he supposedly knows more than the other candidates about how to make the city safe. Now he has to make that city safe. And I don't think what's going on has anything to do with what he learned being a police captain in New York. So good luck on that. And I question whether he has the chops to be what he is now, which is a national politician. He's going to be up against Cuomo in the state, that unhinged de Blasio for a long time. And he has a really complex and difficult city to manage. And yes, I am acting as if he's going to win, because I don't think Curtis really has a chance. So I get that out of the way.
Yeah, we'll get those letters. What do you think his relationship will be? Teresa, I want to get to you, obviously, right. But what do you think the relationship will be with the governor?
It depends on whether he obeys Cuomo or not.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think Cuomo...
Do you think the die's been set yet?
I don't know, Rosemary. I think I may disagree with you here, because I think I know Andrew well enough to know that if somebody's not him, they're no good.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's that simple.
He goes in. I think that's true. Like, anybody who's going to go into an important relationship with Andrew Cuomo starts off at a disadvantage. He has to win him over. And I'm not seeing this Brooklyn police captain having a lot of patience with that.
Yeah.
Teresa?
Well, I don't know a lot about the race or about him. But I, from what I have learned, the fact that he was, as a police officer, an African-American police officer, did stand up against what he considered injustices within the police department, and did that in effective ways, shows some strength of character and will and desire and focus, which will be necessary as a leader in New York, in New York City. So I think that's a good sign. But I also think that if you look at Governor Cuomo's announcement yesterday on gun violence, they both need each other to succeed in those initiatives, right? And they do need to work together.
Absolutely.
So I think that the timing of that announcement is interesting. I think that they do, and certainly Adams brings the background, the combination of public policy governing experience with his, you know, street experience as a police officer. He understands the issues, and frankly, Andrew Cuomo is going to need him to succeed on this gun violence issue as much as he's going to need the governor. So, but I also, a couple of other things about the election itself. I think the fact that the voter turnout was 26% is really discouraging. We're talking about democracy in this country and about all the complex assaults on our democracy. But when only 26% of the voters turn out in such a critical election at a critical time in our history, that's pretty discouraging. On the positive side, separate from him, I did see that it looks like for the first time ever, a majority of the city council will be women.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's for me, that's that's a change in a tide, right, turning to have that majority of women. So I think that's a pretty interesting aspect of the outcome of the race.
I was just looking at this when we were talking about seeking additional clarity. So what that means, apparently, is that though the results have not been officially certified, both Ms. Wiley and Ms. Garcia have not yet conceded. and they, but it's Ms. Garcia who is the closest, although it's still 8,426 votes. And she said that the campaign spokesperson said that they were currently seeking additional clarity on the number of ballots, but made it clear that she and her team were committed to supporting the Democratic nominee. So it seems like they're just trying to count everything up before they.
Yeah, you want to make sure you actually lost before you concede. Right. Yeah.
Al Gore. Yeah.
There is that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So the other big issue, of course, then is the state of emergency in New York State, which many of you alluded to just a moment ago. And what came out of the governor's office yesterday, it is he has declared a gun violence emergency in the state. He has allocated $139 million to address shootings that are rising even as the pandemic recedes and to create jobs for young people. This came out yesterday. The emergency disaster declaration, which the governor said was the first by a state to address gun violence, would allow New York officials to quickly coordinate resources and provide funding for community-led efforts to prevent and respond to shootings. The governor called gun violence a civil rights injustice that overwhelmingly affects poor Black and Latino communities whose youth are 3 to 10 times as likely as whites to be victims of gun violence. But the governor said the issue is urgent for all New Yorkers because the state cannot rebound from the pandemic without addressing it. Alan.
Well, yeah. This is, you know, I always think of riding up to Albany one time on the train, and there was a legislator sitting in front of me. I've told this story too many times. And his assistant was sitting next to him, and he was reading the paper, and he saw something, and he ripped out the article in the paper, and he said to his assistant, "Get me one of these." In other words, write me a bill on one of these. So Cuomo knows how to follow what's going on. And he's right. People are very concerned about crime. And so now we have a crime fighter.
Chris?
Yeah, I like the state. I mean, I don't agree with Cuomo on a lot of things, but I do like the state of emergency declaration. I mean, the devil may be in the details and we'll see what actually comes out of it. But it's good that somebody's at least putting kind of a stamp of this is important on this issue. I mean, in Albany, we've seen, you know, children killed this year. More than once,
right.
Teenagers. If that's not an emergency for your state, I don't really know what is. When people are dying, innocent people are being killed on the streets as they walk to work or walk home from school. I think the part about jobs is interesting because we hear a lot about how there are so many jobs right now that are just can't be filled.
Correct.
So maybe it's just a mismatch of geography where the jobs aren't where these kids are. And, you know, maybe there's a way to kind of link them somehow.
Right. But, to shepherd them to those posts.
What about motivation? Does that bother you at all?
I want to talk about Cuomo's motivation.
Yeah, Cuomo's motivation.
Well, yeah, there is a political side to it. I mean, I think you would know this better than I would.
But I didn't know well enough who was running for mayor and governor.
But didn't Pataki use crime to in his victory over Andrew's father? Wasn't that one of the issues that he ran on?
Yes, it was. Well, the death penalty was the main one.
So I bent the knee to him, as they say in Game of Thrones, to Cuomo when I read about this. I think it's a brilliant move. It definitely is something that it's necessary. It's visceral. It's like, hey, that's pretty cool. It immediately taps into his book, which is the source of his biggest weakness right now. He's saying, my management style works, and now I'm going to use it again, and I'll show you. I think it's really bold. It's a statement that he is not for the Second Amendment. He's already hated upstate because of the SAFE Act, and now he's doubling down on that. It's almost Trumpian on the left, and it shows he is a formidable contender and why, even though he's got how many scandals now, I've lost count, he's still—
Quite a few, yeah.
He still is a contender for national, if not state politics.
I'm struck by what you said about Trumpian on the left. I've been thinking about that a lot lately.
What does that mean?
I think he's got some of that. What?
It means you double down when you're called out on something. He's got, no, my leadership style, you know, the one I wrote that book on, it works, and now I'm going to show it to you again. again. That's doubling down. That's Trumpian.
And you also,
it's in the face of people criticizing him for his SAFE Act. There are signs all over upstate with SAFE Act and a slash mark through it. He's saying, "Okay, now I got more on guns for you." It's Trumpian.
Well, and also in right, I mean, isn't that was sort of the playbook after the all of the allegations of sexual misconduct that he just kept going.
That's Bill Clinton. That's the Bill Clinton model, and I'm sure his brother counts
a lot of other people.
I mean, you just move ahead and go. We have to take a break. When we come back, we'll wrap around again, I promise. Panel at WAMC.org is our address. If you'd like to get your letter in, panel at WAMC.org. Alan Chartock, Chris Churchill, Rosemary Armeo, and Teresa Bourgeois will be back. First news from the BBC. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Alan Chartock, Chris Churchill, Rosemary Armeo, and Teresa Bourgeois. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. So we look at this emergency declaration from the governor, and the question I have is, will it work?
Well, it depends what you mean by will it work. I mean, you know.
Will we have less gun violence as a result of this?
I don't know.
I mean, it's being used to stem gun violence, correct? So, the way to see if it is effective is if the numbers go down.
I spent 3 years working on gun violence initiatives in Boston in the late 80s, early 90s, and the mayor, Ray Flynn, was the mayor of Boston at the time, and he took a very comprehensive approach. I was an honor to work for him.
Okay,
but on this topic, he took a very comprehensive approach. Only a small portion of that approach was a lock them up, and the vast majority of the approach was job training, skills building, improve the parks so kids have something to do, take back the parks, try to do intervention not with the leaders of the gangs but with the mid and lower level members of the gangs to sort of pull the power away from the gangs, and then focus with the federal government on the influx of guns into the city. And it's been studied over time. I think it was shown to work. It laid the groundwork for a lot of other things. But I think just declaring that gun violence is a public health problem makes a big difference. Focusing attention on the problem makes a difference. Generating a conversation will make a difference better than ignoring it and better than a 100% lock them up strategy. And again, let's go back to the, you know, appears to be the incoming mayor of New York City. I think that if they do team up together rather than fight with each other, I think that they together can make a difference.
Rosemary?
Yeah, I can't add to that. I think that's exactly true. I love the research aspect of this under the NRA. Congress went along with it. Not even research, not even academicians looking further out at the effects, the causes, all the triggers, all the many things that we really don't fully know about and gun violence have not been looked at. So if nothing else, if he accomplishes that, he's got to win.
And the trauma caused by gun violence, not just for the person who shot, but all the people who witnessed that, all the people who experienced that, particularly young people, that trauma, research has shown, can be, you know, last a lifetime. And we really need to understand the long-term impact of people living in these neighborhoods where there's constant threat and constant experience of being shot. And, of course, a separate part of gun violence is suicide, which people don't talk enough about. And a lot of the deaths with guns are death by suicide. And that, too, has to be dealt with. I know that's not the primary focus of this. But the trauma, it's their health consequences associated. They're obvious and less obvious ones that need to be addressed.
You know, I was very struck by the comments that you guys were making about Cuomo and Adams. Now, yes, one could make the argument that there is the possibility of getting along together and that will be seen as a good thing. But there's also traditional Cuomo stuff, which is, you know, terrible things are happening, and we have to blame it on the city, you know, as opposed to the state. And that would be a regular Cuomo move. So, Teresa, you look disapproving. I thought maybe
Cuomo loves his foils, and for the last 4 years plus, De Blasio and Trump have been great foils for him. You know, he's been able to kind of blame a lot of New York's problems on either the federal government or what's happening in New York City. And it's easy to say that, well, Adams and Cuomo are both moderates, and Adams is one of the few Democrats not to call for Cuomo to resign, so therefore they're going to get along a lot better. But a lot of the fights with de Blasio weren't really about policy so much. They were just kind of this kind of macho...
Yeah, they were silly.
Arm wrestles
had
over
a falling
control
out years ago that they could never get over, to get over it.
Well, right. I think it's that they both wanted to be president. There was that also. And so, you know, anybody who stepped into that was going to be in trouble with Cuomo. Hmm.
Yeah, and they both, I mean, I tend to side with de Blasio a little bit on some of this stuff, just because I do feel that Cuomo kind of muscles his way into local issues that aren't really the province of the governor.
Interesting.
You know, a mayor of New York City does deserve to make some decisions about his own city. But you know, the other thing to this, too, is that de Blasio was fighting a different Cuomo. Cuomo's a weakened politician
right now.
That's
true.
Adams is not, you know, will have in the balance. I think Adams will be better off than de Blasio was.
And I think he needs Adams. And also, you know, he does need an enemy, but the enemy was, you know, in the last year, the enemy was COVID, right? And in some cases, for a while, Trump. And now the enemy is the guns, and the enemy is the, you know, gun runners and those others, and he can team up with Adams to work on this.
Point of information. Now that he's declared this emergency, does he get emergency powers again as he had under the COVID crisis?
I was wondering that.
I don't think so. I mean, the COVID emergency powers were granted by the legislature.
And they're not about to do that now.
Yeah.
No, he also said it when he gave them back, said we would never need them again.
And I think it's just skimming this.
2 weeks later.
Wishful thinking. I
think it... Just skimming this, I was wondering about that myself, and I don't have the full answer. Maybe somebody listening does, but I think it allows for information sharing that might otherwise be allowed for. I think that there are, within the list of areas of focus, it allows some more flexibility than might otherwise, but I don't know for sure, so maybe somebody listening can.
And arguably the most significant, sorry to interrupt, Alan, the most significant part of this is the legislation which will allow New Yorkers to sue gun companies. Right for, I forget the,
right.
You know, but that was happening already. You know, he put a signature on it yesterday.
Sandy Hook is the one
that's a very heavy lift, though. But I think some of this other stuff and just focusing on the public health aspects of it and just focusing on the issue itself, talking about engaging people, engaging the community, will give him a platform. An issue as Rosemary was talking about, and then I think a really important one.
Mm-hmm.
He can. You know, do good for himself.
It's a really
state.
Bold and it's an astute political move,
especially,
aside from everything else.
Especially now, Rosemary, that your sister and your family are raising money for the two crooks who were working for you and trying to steal the state blind. You're looking puzzled.
Yeah, I don't know what I'm trying to figure out.
We're talking about Joe Prococo, who got sent to jail.
Yeah.
Because he was looking for his bling. Is that what they call it?
The Cuomo.
But second there, I thought Rosemary was looking for Joe Prococo.
I know. It's like, wait, what am I doing here?
But, you know, this is the, you know, beautiful sweet spot where good politics and good policy mesh,
exactly.
Right? And that's what this
exactly.
is. And I, you know, I'm sure that there are some people who won't agree, but I think this is a critical issue. And
I just wonder if it came out of a family conversation with Chris, now that it might be outlawed by CNN, where they sat around and said, you know what you could do to get out of all this?
Yeah.
Well, I think he had to do was look at the Twitter account of Republicans.
Exactly.
Like you know, Elise Stefanik or Lee Zeldin, and they're hammering the crime issue. That is clearly the issue that they want to pound Democrats on, not only in the governor's race next year, but also in, you know, Taking back the house and
yeah,
everything.
All the races.
Crime is going to be their primary focus.
But you look at the data all over the state and all over the country, and that's what's driving this. You know, and that's what's. But what is the Republican solution? You know, what is
they don't have a solution. They just want to. They're just not in power right now, so they can blast the Democrats for it. They're also Republicans in New York are also hammering on the issue of why isn't he impeached yet? Has it been an exceptionally long time? Are we wrong to keep saying wait until Letitia James finishes her investigation? Should they be acting yet?
We discussed this as it was unfolding, and it seemed like the best bet was fall. I don't know. Is that still
there's an editorial even today from New York Republicans saying, give the nomination right now to Lee Zeldin. Forget a primary and let him spend the next 6 months hammering Cuomo directly. And why isn't since obviously it said the legislature is not doing this.
The legislature does seem to be moving pretty slowly on it. I don't think they're too eager to
take it on.
I don't know that they have the votes, tell you the truth.
Right, moments pass.
But his political future really hinges on that Tish James report. I mean, if it's damning and devastating, and a lot of people expect that it will be, then he will be in real trouble. But if it tells us what we already know, then I think he'll survive and go into the race in pretty good shape.
I wouldn't want to be her right now. Because on the one hand, if she goes after him, she's going to be said to be ambitious, and therefore she's trying to you know, get to be governor that way. But on the other hand, there are an awful lot of people who like Cuomo, who therefore, if she does that, will say she's just taking advantage and I don't want her in as governor.
But if her report is factual and everything is documented and it's thorough and doesn't look like it's just a shoddy political attack, I mean, if it's fact-based and it's hard to argue with, I don't know how people can blame her for that.
But
it's good.
I don't disagree, but what is, you know, there were a lot of fact-based reports about Trump and his personal behavior and his political behavior, and that didn't seem to discourage, you know, people.
I would think, though, that New York Democrats would like to think that they hold themselves to a higher standard.
Right.
I do not want to
compare Trump's behavior and Cuomo's behavior completely. You know, I don't think they are on parallel. But what I'm saying is that even before the first Trump election, everyone saw the tape
and still supported him. He's accused of a sexual assault at the governor's mansion. If the report says that, finds that that is a true accusation, I don't see how he can go on. Right? I mean, that's a serious
allegation. The same way that Trump did.
Right.
Right.
But so is there different? I'm not defending Trump on any of this, but most of that stuff was not from, you know, this was a few months ago at the governor's mansion. It wasn't, you know, the accusations against Trump were generally not at the White House. And also, like I said, Democrats in New York, I think, are going to hold themselves to a higher standard than Trump was held.
Joe Biden was accused of groping a woman in the halls of Congress, and nothing came of that.
30 years ago.
That was all.
We're talking about
political accusation. That's in the same category.
And there are a lot of people.
So look at the excuses we're giving. Listen to all the excuses. We have bizarre ideas of what's a bad crime and what's an okay.
I don't think it's right or wrong.
Crime.
I'm just saying the.
Well, you think it's wrong. A sexual assault is wrong.
It's absolutely wrong. No, I'm not suggesting that it's okay. Okay, I'm just suggesting that that we've been through this however many years of Trump where people, you know, just before the election, these tapes come out or people know about his behavior and they support him anyway. And there are, I mean, look at the January 6th. Look what happened January 6th. And people are. It just befuddles me.
One last thing. There's an internet meme going around now, which is so telling. And it says, you know, Trump right now is defending his company, saying, look, OK, so we like hit a couple $1 million in corporate expenses. So what? You know, it's not like I was selling cigarettes loose on the street or passing a bad $20 bill. Those crimes resulted in death. And he is like going on to the highest office in the land. Now, I don't blame politicians for that. I don't blame police for that. That's the American public has done that.
All right. We have to take a break. We have a lot of letters. We'll get to those on the other side. We welcome you into the conversation. Panel@WAMC.org. Panel@WAMC.org. We will be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us. We greatly appreciate it. All right, let's go to the letters that I promised to go to. We begin with Garrett. The larger number of exhausted ballots in the New York City primary was discouraging. 15% of the ballots didn't have enough of the choices filled in to have a bearing in the later rounds of voting. No way of knowing if that was a commentary on the choices or just people not understanding the new system. Very likely
both
would have influenced the outcome.
I mean, Rosemary last week said that, you know, why not just vote for the candidate you want and just leave the other ones blank?
Yeah, some people talked about that, how you can game the system. Yeah, I did,
because that's called bullet voting, and that makes an awful lot of sense. That, you know, you don't want to give your vote to anybody else. You want to give your vote only to one person and not have it transferred.
What if, asks Ed,
what?
The possibility that crime emergency, quote unquote, is yet another wonderful foil by Andrew to divert attention from his incredible abuse of autocratic and criminal behavior.
It works. That's what I said. It works. It's a great idea.
If that is your outcome,
yeah,
it's a great, if that is your yeah hoped
if
for
you're
outcome.
Andrew.
But, you know, both things can be true at the same time.
Right.
It can be like Teresa said, it can be good policy, but also be a wonderful way to divert from all the terrible things that are happening.
Exactly.
And isn't that, I mean, you want your elected officials to follow good policy, you know, that also they want to get reelected, good politics. People will support them if they do that. That's the part of governing, right?
Yep.
Mike writes to us and says, without sounding like a broken record nor discounting the reality of a recent surge in gun-related violent crime, I have to once again point out that our corporate media apparatus is using gun violence as a narrative/framing device to push vintage tough-on-crime policies that have already proven to be ineffective in addressing root problems associated with crime. See Chris Cuomo's recent spots on bail reform. Keep a close eye on efforts to roll back recent bail reform achievements.
Well, I haven't seen what Chris Cuomo is saying on bail reform, but I don't think that that's generally the case with most of the media outlets in New York. I think New York Post would be an exception. And the New York Post, by the way, we shouldn't really discount, really, really championed Adams' candidacy.
That's right.
And may have helped put him over the top.
And although the New York Times endorsed their own candidate, and she damn near almost won.
Yeah.
And but it came out of nowhere.
I don't know what Chris Cuomo's proposals were, and I think the bail reform issue is very complex, and there's some good things that happen and unintended consequences that actually some people predicted might happen. So that's a pretty complicated issue. But I will, to the point that gun violence is very, very complicated and it needs a broad approach to solve it. I absolutely agree with that. And that's why I like the idea of the research that they're doing, taking a comprehensive look, understanding the link between, you know, education skills, job readiness, the environment in which people grow up in, the impact of trauma on, you know, early childhood trauma on the lifelong impact of that, those kinds of things. And the easy availability of guns in certain neighborhoods is a real problem, and it needs to be addressed in a comprehensive way.
We go to this letter from a listener whose name I do not know. John, of course Cuomo is going to be raked over the coals for his behavior while Trump gets away with doing the same thing and worse, more frequently, for far longer. Because it's okay if you're a Republican. It's only wrong if you're a Democrat.
It's not okay no matter who you are.
We then go to this letter from Pat. The problem with Cuomo, aside from his annoying pronouncements, is that unlike his father, he is mentally unhinged and unstable.
What other than that?
That would be a problem. You can see it in his eyes that he is dangerous. The more power he gets, the less stable he is. I suspect his father was very disappointed in him.
I don't know. His father.
Pat's. I just want you to know, Pat signed the letter. Loved the show.
But I saw Mario put his hand on Andrew's cheek and say, "Andrew's a good boy."
We do that with your kid, right?
He is oldest son in an Italian family. There is no way that they will ever disown him.
Oh,
why
no,
would,
I agree
I mean,
with you.
Why would they?
Yeah. They wouldn't.
I mean, it's just...
All right. We go to Joe, J-O, who writes, "We may be mistaken to underestimate Curtis Sliwa's appeal in a time when crime is increasing. Sliwa was the highly charismatic head of the Guardian Angels, the unarmed law enforcement vigilantes of the 1980s. Republican or not, he is an articulate spokesman."
Excuse me.
My apologies.
Salute.
Thank you very much. He is an articulate spokesman who always professes to be there, quote, for the people. This may prove to be a powerful pull for people fearing for their safety despite their politics. Anyone?
Oh, gosh, I hope not, because, yes, he is charismatic and did some really interesting things, but he knows so nothing about governance. And this is a huge, complex, gigantic city. He would be so out of his league, it scares me. But then again, we put Trump in the country in the same situation.
But you saw what happened.
Yeah.
People who don't understand.
How'd that work out?
People who don't know how to govern. And I think that Adams has an interesting, you know, mix of frontline law enforcement right. experience with many, many years of public policy and governing experience. And I think that that's a unique, not unique, but it's an interesting mix of skill sets that he brings to the job at a time when those skill sets are, I think, are needed. And I think, obviously, you need to have the election, see what the outcome is.
That's liberal of you.
No.
Write,
I mean, you
write,
can't
write it down.
But then, you can't declare it over. But I do think
I'm
that,
declaring it over.
Well, you have, okay. I think you have to have an election. Lots of things can happen between now and then. You have to have
but
an election.
Write down that on Roselle's birthday, July 7th.
Happy birthday, Roselle.
July 7th. July 7th on
put
July,
asterisk Ringo.
On Ringo.
On July 7th, Shattuck said, "Ain't no way Sliwa is going to be the mayor of New York." Period.
I hope you're doing something
yeah,
nice
I,
for
I
her
agree
birthday.
With you on that. I don't yeah. think you're going out too far on a limb.
Yeah, no. I agree with you.
I mean,
but,
if there was... If he had any hope, it would be to run as a kind of a law and order, anti-crime guy, and Eric Adams kind of takes that away from him.
Right. Mm.
My understanding also, and correct me if I'm wrong on this, and I wish I had more information in front of me, but I thought that what is Sliwa's, Curtis Sliwa's popularity?
Job.
No, I know, but a popularity, because I thought it was sort of on the wane, that there were that there
I always
were
thought
issues.
That, yeah,
yeah. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I mean, I could see this being a race at the height of his popularity, but, I mean, since then he's been a radio talk show host, not that there's anything wrong with that. It is a fine, upstanding profession. But I don't know what else.
Why is he a Republican?
Well, there's the other story. That's the other question, right? Yeah. I'm looking for polls. I don't think there are any have been taken, so yeah. we'll wait on that one. All right, let's take a let's see. I think we have time for one more letter, and then we'll go to a much needed break here.
Okay, I propose Z.
What do you mean? I'm sorry.
You said I have time for one more letter.
Oh, and you said I got you. See, I'm not with it today.
I didn't get it either.
Not
I got
it.
A dad
right
joke.
Away.
That's a dad
all
joke.
Right.
Kind of a Sesame Street joke.
Today we have the letter Z.
Two. Richard says it's the same old cycle. Civil rights protest highlights the intolerable plight of minority groups within our society. The body politic reacts. We're shocked to find that such things are happening. Something must be done about this. After a brief period, which various policies are discussed perfunctorily, it begins to be pointed out that a rising tide of lawlessness threatens to overwhelm us, and for all of the reform zeal shifts to tough on crime, law and order prioritization. Mm-hmm. And that is from Richard. We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. First, we have a break. News with Ray Graff, and then we'll be back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this Wednesday morning. Yes,
yeah,
Wednesday morning. Very
right.
Nice to have you with us. And we thank you all.
Lovely music.
It is. It is beautiful music. It is from the album Dance, performed by the Escher String Quartet.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow. Who are they?
No, I know their work.
They're lovely.
Yeah, they are. Absolutely. All right. Let us go to some letters here, and then we'll move on to other topics. It appears, says Linda, that the outer boroughs took supremacy over Manhattan with Adams' win. He beat all other candidates in the Bronx, Brooklyn, Queens, even Staten Island. Garcia took Manhattan.
I got it.
The Bronx and Staten Island, too.
I get it.
If all gun owners are required to...
Because Manhattan people are different from the boroughs. It's that simple.
People are people.
What'd you say?
I said people are people. How are they different?
Well, they're different in that there's class issues, there's educational issues, there's economic issues. You know, we have to have paid for an apartment in Manhattan. It's a whole different group of people.
Yeah.
Nowhere did they vote in enough numbers, though.
That's right.
All right. John says if all gun owners are required to belong to a militia and militias can be regulated, then gun ownership can be regulated through the rules of militias. All right.
Whatever.
And what Keith says, you're talking about gun violence, but America and the Supreme Court have already made their decisions with the Heller decision and all the following loosening of gun regulations. Sandy Hook, El Paso, and Las Vegas haven't changed our minds, so nothing will. Let's talk about the crime of the century when Trump tried to stage a freaking coup against the U.S. government. Trump and the rest of them should all be in prison right now.
This strikes me as a little bit defeatist. I mean, the problem in cities like Albany is illegal guns, and if they're illegal, they can be, you know, prosecuted, the trafficking of them. And we don't punish crimes like, you know, straw purchases strongly enough. There are a lot of things that can be done to crack down on illegal guns. And a lot of gun owners, legal gun owners, would be happy to see that, too.
Right.
Because, you know, if you believe in the Second Amendment, then the greatest threat to it is the kind of daily toll we're seeing on our streets. I don't think that the Heller decision means that we just have to give up and say whatever, you know.
It's still a lousy decision.
Yeah, you're right.
But you can't give up. You can't give up on these neighborhoods. But you can't give up on these children. You can't give up on, you know, these environments where kids should not have to be growing up in these environments. And elders should not be having to live in these environments where they're afraid to sit out on their porch or in a window, you know, at the front of the house. And which we, you know, have seen the consequences of drive-by shootings where an elder was sitting looking out her window and was shot, you know, just... And you've seen that with children, and people should not have to live that way, and we cannot ignore that.
I don't think Republicans care about any of that.
I do.
I think they have an extremely cruel basis for their policies, health and crime among them, and the Supreme Court absolutely made it harder to protect the kind of people you're talking about.
So the question for that is why? Because if you, Rosemary, if you take a look at what people think about gun control, they want it. Polls all show that.
Right.
They want it big time. So the idea that a Supreme Court is adamant in insisting that everybody be allowed to have a gun, which I think, as you say, Rosemary, it was a faulty decision. Based on the kind of logic I would like to see.
I mean, the Heller decision did say that the Second Amendment allows gun ownership, but it did also make it very clear that guns can be regulated. I mean, Scalia was explicit about that. So there's no reason that the Heller Amendment means you can't crack down on, say, assault weapons or, well, I mean, it gets a little complicated, but you know, there are weapons that you can still crack down on. The Heller decision does not keep you from doing that.
And then it hasn't happened, however, because in addition to a Supreme Court saying, okay, if you want to regulate, you have to do it right. You have to have a Congress or state legislators willing to do it the right way. And we don't have that either. So that's why I say it's complicated.
The reason I kind of hesitated on that is because the Heller decision did say that you can't ban guns that are in common usage. And you could argue at this point that the AR-15
is in common usage.
So it is, it does allow for regulation.
All right, let's go to, I think we're done with letters, so we're going to go to new topics. We go to the, I want to talk about, in the time that we have here before bottom of the hour break, is the Biden plan for vaccinations as well as what we now know about the Delta variant. So I'll start with the Delta variant, which The world is worried about the Delta virus variant. Studies show vaccines are effective against it, although it is highly contagious and it is sweeping the world right now, including in this country and especially in unvaccinated areas of this country where there remain quite a few. Meanwhile, the president has announced that renewing his push to have more people vaccinate and trying to spur shots and to reach those who remain unvaccinated. He said yesterday, please get vaccinated now. It works. It's free. It's never been easier. It's never been more important. Do it now for yourself and for the people that you care about, for your neighborhood, for your country. It sounds corny, but it's a patriotic thing to do. President Biden called on Tuesday for employers to set up clinics at work and to offer paid time off for workers as part of a renewed push to reach the tens of millions of Americans who remain unvaccinated. Just 2 days after he hosted a big White House 4th of July celebration and declared America is coming back together, Mr. Biden is turning his attention to a public health conundrum. Despite his administration's aggressive push, he has not met his self-imposed goal of having 70% of adults at least partially vaccinated by now, and officials have already tried many techniques. Biden noted a different metric. By the end of the week, nearly 160 million Americans, not quite half the population, will be fully vaccinated. The worrisome Delta variant spreading quickly around the country remains a concern in areas with lower vaccinations, although there is not yet good data on how all of the vaccines hold up against Delta. Several widely used shots, including those made by Pfizer, are still effective against the Delta variant after two doses. But the numbers that we're using, especially in New York State, of the 70% is for one dose. Well, let's say you all.
Good luck. The people who don't have it don't want it. It's available. It's free. It's been tested and proved on all the rest of us who did get it. They don't want it. I wish we would take what we have and ship it overseas. There are people there literally dying to get it. I have a friend I'm helping put through school in Rwanda. They switched to e-learning today because it's too dangerous. Rwanda. And they were waiting for vaccine literally in Bosnia. There's efforts to move vaccine over there that's not being used here. I applaud the idea, especially going door to door. If you have the certain right kind of people going door to door, it wouldn't be me. I'd say, stupid, get a shot. Whereas you, Teresa, would be very reasonable and explain it all nicely. Let me just do this now. I would not be effective, but I can see where that might help.
Show me your neck vein.
You can vaccinated.
You can see why that might not work. That approach might not work.
Better than a toy buzzer.
But why does it have to be either or? I mean, I think that as a country, we need to do both. I think we have an obligation to do both. And I think this is going to happen conversation by conversation, and President Biden showing the leadership that we need to rally people, to rally organizations, to try to increase the numbers. And I think you see Texas, Arkansas, Missouri, other states in which there are very low vaccination rates, the numbers of
very high sick rates.
And
Governor
the hospitals
saying,
are,
get a shot, right, and it still isn't happening.
The hospitals are filling up. And so I think when you see the people, the more you focus on that, it educates people and the importance of it. It's going to take some time. But I applaud the president for not giving up, for being, you know, persistent, tenacious, because that's what it's going to take.
I'd like it more than persistent and tenacious in his view. I'd like everybody to be mandated.
Well, I think that...
Well, I'm not just quite through yet with that, in a sense.
I still need a mandate.
Mandates. I don't know what mandate is.
I would like everybody to be criminalized who does not take the
round them all up and
that's not a lot.
Law and order.
Let's put him on Guantanamo.
That's not a lot different than Rosemary just sticking him in the neck with it.
No, I said that would not work.
Yeah. Well,
but Ellen, you can't.
Would you get more people doing it if you made a rule? or a law, you'd get more people. You wouldn't get every person.
First of all, the political backlash to that would undo anything Biden wants to do.
Right.
And number two, I don't think you can do that until it has full FDA approval. You're asking people at this point to take an experimental drug, and there is some percentage of the population that's going to balk at that a little bit.
It seems to be about 48%.
No, I don't.
I think there's
who knows? I'm not going to estimate it, but there's a group of people. It's not the full 48% who would take it if it were full FDA.
Do you really think that?
I do think so. Yeah.
I think a lot of healthcare workers.
And the other key part too is once it gets full FDA approval, the drug companies can advertise these things, and they're really good at getting people to take drugs that. People don't need half the time.
And then have far more, you know.
Those gauzy ads of people out doing happy things will
with
convince
the little,
some
with
segment
the small
of the
population. Type underneath saying this could kill you or make you jump off a bridge.
That pill can take care of your toenail fungus, but it can also stop your heart.
Yeah. But you don't hear the stop your heart part. You're focusing on all the happy people and all the.
And then I can dance again.
Alternatively, so cute.
No, but I do think that the FDA approval will make some sort of difference. And then once we get there and we see that if it isn't making a difference, then I think the discussion that Alan wants to have could be had.
Well, I want it now.
Well, but if everybody, I'll go back to saying the same thing I say over and over. If everybody listening to this right now reached out to one person that they know who's not vaccinated and convince them, not yell at them or stick, you know, jab them in the neck, but help them think through.
Hypnotize them and take them
good. I sat and talked to this woman, and she told me about how even masks are unacceptable. Yes. In countries that use the masks, they all have TB now. And I sat there and listened. I did not bite her head off, although I wanted to. Right. And she's not getting vaccinated. I cannot reach these people. Find somebody else.
But I like your idea, and I think I heard it before during the Trump-Biden election. Everybody who knows somebody who's voting for Trump should call them up.
Right, and just talk it through with them, not yell at them.
I talked to a person that I know and love, and they were telling me about how if you got the shot, then – and by the way, I would note, and I didn't explore this fully because it'll become apparent why I didn't explore it fully because
– This is a relative.
Well, no, there were bigger issues at play there, and I didn't have really time for follow-up questions. but I don't know if it was just this vaccination or just shots in general. But the fact is the thought being – that the government was giving you the shot would then be commanding you to do things that would, this goes back to our earlier conversation, that would have us perform violent acts with guns so that the government can take our guns away.
Jeez.
Okay. Now,
so that's a more complex conversation that you need
to
have.
It's a more
that might be
a mental health issue.
Okay,
give them Teresa's number.
Okay, but talk to the primary care doctors,
right?
And that's what they're hearing,
right?
I mean, not
right.
just that, but the right. the fetal tissue in the right. in, you know use,
the whole the, religious fetal tissue there, thing is just
there
crazy.
Is there are a million.
I shouldn't say crazy. I'm
what
sorry.
Do you always say during the fun drive? There's a million reasons not to give.
let's put this in the category
there are
of
a million conspiracy theories, but right. that's true of almost everything.
But I'm saying
there's a lot of disinformation.
Yes,
and a lot of it came from the president, right? The former president, and a lot of it comes from the. You know, different right wing or left wing, whatever communication.
And a lot
we
of it comes from people just having a fun on Facebook or whatever, making
just
things
not
up.
Not realizing the harm
they're
causing.
Spread, yeah.
But,
yeah.
But the way to, you know, information combats disinformation. And so
this is just a society wide problem. It's not just a vaccine issue. There's a conspiracy theory for almost anything you can think about at this point.
Right.
And but all you can do is yeah, I mean, but the if you make them mandatory, I mean, you think about the conspiracy theories that will flourish.
Sure.
Right. I think that would backlash. Yeah. But I think if you just get groups of people who have interactions with their shared groups of people, whether it's their church group or their book clubs or, you know, you have to meet people where they are, provide some alternative information and people. I was listening, was it yesterday, today, about an ad campaign that one community was doing, and they were having moms be interviewed.
I heard that.
For that ad campaign, and people from the community.
Come
and
to.
So people see people like themselves who were a little hesitant but overcame their hesitancy and got the shot.
Come to think of it, though, I have been feeling kind of violent since I got vaccinated, so maybe there's something...
I thought it was since you were sitting next to me in this.
Well, maybe that's it. Yeah.
Since the we're going to get letters about making light of this serious topic.
Absolutely.
Well,
you were talking about jabbing people in the neck, so.
And you people deserve it.
No, I think I was responsible for that. But anyway, let me ask about the concern. I'll sober you all up. I mean, the Delta variant, and what I've read about it, is really scary.
Very scary.
And I don't know. So less scary if you're vaccinated. If you believe that, the vaccinations are effective against it, which most of the information seems to say
it is.
They are.
Yeah.
That you'll still get sick, but less sick, is what my understanding, right?
Right.
It varies, but yes, if you get it,
if you get it.
But jury's still out a little bit on that. But if you have areas where there are 75% of the population that is not vaccinated, that seems to be a huge issue. And I know I'm throwing the kitchen sink in here, but oh my God, we're having the Olympics in 2 weeks.
Yeah. Like, what are they thinking?
I don't know. And we already have athletes going over there. I guess not our athletes, but other athletes that have shown up that are already.
So let me get this straight. If you killed somebody because you didn't get vaccinated, that would be bad. But if you smoke marijuana, then that would be different. You are looking strangely at me.
Meaning, if you test,
I mean, there's this lady out there,
Shikari.
Yeah.
Shikari
Richardson.
She
can't go because she smoked marijuana.
Well,
right.
She may have. It may be a favor that she's not going. She'll stay out of harm's way.
Yeah, maybe.
She knew what the rules were. She broke them. She's paying the penalty. She's accepting it like a woman. Good for her.
Well, the rules
probably need to be changed, but right now the rules stand.
Let me get that straight, just because you just said it, and I just want to make sure I understand what it meant. You said accepting it like a woman, as opposed to a man would not do that.
Oh, no, just like a... Well, I'm not putting words in your mouth. But I mean, she's expecting it like an adult.
Up. I think the cliche is like a man.
Right.
And
so
I was
man
trying
up.
To stand.
Oh, now
that
I get
on
okay. I'm
instead
so
of
sorry.
Saying man up, she
I'm
said
sorry.
It's woman
I didn't
up.
Get
yeah.
it.
Yeah. No, and she's treating like an adult. She said, "Look, I screwed up.
You're
I
yeah.
shouldn't have done it.
Yeah.
And yet, I'm okay.
I take
responsibility for
right.
it.
And she also has raised the issue about whether that ought to be a rule, which I think will get looked at. It won't protect her. It won't help her. But she may end up having done herself a favor, because I do think those Olympics are going to be dangerous.
Lethal.
And she said, I'll see you at the Worlds.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I'll see you at the Worlds.
She's
cool.
Worlds. Yeah,
it's more than just her
impressive.
Hair and nails that are cool.
Yeah, very impressive.
Their athletic ability. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, they're awesome.
Like,
how does she do that?
I don't know. And run that fast?
You
think it would slow
real.
You down.
Of course they're not.
Of course they're not.
Neither is her hair color. Shocking.
All right, let's go
We're
to...
We're joking about and the Delta
And apparently neither
variant,
is her good
bad.
Mood.
I do have...
I got that. It took me a while.
It's a good thing the show is an hour and 50 minutes. It
should be 2 hours.
Gives everybody time to
catch up
with the jokes.
Rosemary's profound statement.
Anne says, I am fully vaccinated. The major excuse that I hear from people for not being vaccinated is that they don't know what the long-term effects are. So they are going to wait a year and see what happens. I don't know what these people are looking for. Do they expect that a large number of vaccinated people will get seriously sick and die in a year? In the meantime, the vaccinated take a serious risk at getting COVID, whose risk is already known, and passing it on to others. Anyone on that? Hearing none, we move on. All right, let's go to, let's see. Well, we were just talking about Shikari Richardson to miss the Olympics, so I did have that story on the docket, so let's talk about it real quick. It is now official that she will not be going to the Tokyo Olympics. She was the 100-meter champion at the U.S. Olympic trials last month, had been ruled out of her signature event because of a positive marijuana test and subsequent one-month suspension that ignited debate across the sports world and beyond. Richardson has steeled herself for the possibility she would be forced to watch the Olympics, at which she could have become a gold medal winner and a global sensation. The USATF offered sympathy and support for Richardson while applauding her accountability and saying it fully agrees that the merit of the World Anti-Doping Agency rules related to THC should be reevaluated. The idea here is that marijuana would be a performance-enhancing drug.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a dumb rule. I mean, marijuana is no more and performance-enhancing than alcohol is.
Or, and alcohol, if it is found in your system, is not disqualifying, correct?
Right.
So that would be the argument. And so and many people are making this. But to Rosemary's very good point, she knew all those athletes know the rules, and that's the rule. So right. As dumb as it is, it's still the rule.
Mm-hmm. So how do they do that? I mean, I've never quite understood. If you know the consequences, and the consequences are that formidable, then how do you break the rules? You think you're going to get away with it? Is that
she,
what it is?
I don't think she thought about it. She had a loss in her family.
Right. Yeah.
And she was mourning, and she just felt, like, lousy, and so she took some. And I don't think she thought about it beyond that.
Yeah. Mm.
But, you know, we passed.
She made a mistake. She's a young person.
Yeah, she's
under
21.
Enormous pressure, who had a loss in her family. She made a mistake. And the impressive thing is that she's just owning it. And
she's a global sensation anyway. She didn't have to go to the Olympics for that. She'll be at the next Olympics.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, you already have the...
Unless she smokes marijuana before she does.
Well, she's going to have
the
endorsements.
The rule will be
changed. Yeah, I think the rule will be changed. And I don't know, is that rule... I meant to do this research, but is in other competitions and other sports, is that also the rule?
I believe it is.
Mm-hmm. I mean, this is also an international rule too. And while our attitudes toward marijuana have changed dramatically in the last decade,
that isn't
the case all
That's
around
right.
the world.
That's a great point. Yeah,
I just never thought that THC ever enhanced my performance. I mean, she actually
didn't
was
make,
putting
it doesn't
herself
make you faster.
No, it didn't give her an advantage. So
yeah, it slows you down if anything.
Yeah, give her pass her another.
We have to take a break. We'll be right back after this. I think we accomplished a lot during the break. I don't know about you. I think we accomplished a lot.
Some big breakthroughs.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable. It's our final go-around with this wonderful panel, Alan Shartok, Chris Churchill, Rosemary Armeo, and Teresa Bourgeois. We welcome you to join us. Your last call for letters, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org.
And for the last 5 minutes, we've been discussing what to get Roselle for her birthday.
Okay, but you don't want to say it on the air.
Yeah,
she's
Alan.
Listening.
Yeah. All
or
that work we
listen?
Just did.
She probably doesn't
she
listen.
She doesn't listen,
she
Alan.
Gets enough Alan during the rest
Alan.
Of the day.
Yes. What?
Don't undo all the good work we just accomplished.
All right. Well, again, we wish
like
Roselle a very...
Going to Manhattan, or the ocean, like Manhattan or the ocean or something like that?
Yeah. Yeah, you're done. Okay. Hey, speaking of traveling, we are going to be at Tanglewood on Friday. We are taking our first road trip since 2019 with this show. We had a really good excuse last year, and we're back at Tanglewood. We'll be on the press porch at Tanglewood on Friday morning. We'll be there broadcasting live from 9 to noon. We are going to meet the new CEO, Gail Samuel, who has taken over for Mark Volpe, who retired last month. So we will... we'll be talking to her. Emmanuel Axe, Manny Axe, will be with us as well. We'll talk to our good friend Tony Fogg, as well as Ellen Heistein of the Tanglewood Music Center.
That's right.
TMC and fellows from the TMC, and just a lot of really good stuff. And we look forward to it. We'll be broadcasting. It's always a great time, a lot of fun, and we hope you will join us on Friday morning. So a lot of great musical memories to be made, and we hope you'll be with us at Tanglewood. You can't actually come. People always ask that. So, can we come to Tanglewood and see the broadcast? And the answer is no. For two reasons. Absolutely not. For two reasons. One, we are in a press fortune. It's an area that isn't open to the public.
Very small.
But also, the other reason is the grounds are closed at that time where we are. So that's the big reason. Okay. And there isn't room for you anyway, because we're in a room.
There is nothing like
that. Isn't it great, though, how these venues seem to be emerging successfully from the COVID? Yeah. It's really heartwarming.
It's really exciting. Yeah, I really missed it last year. Mm-hmm. I really did.
And
yeah.
So many of these, Cafe Lena, others, that really managed their way through and seem to be coming out the other end of this.
Well, artistic people are very creative.
They are.
And they've come up with some really cool ways to present things. We were just in the break talking about this immersive Van Gogh exhibit. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, well, you put it in a big place and you have it up on the walls and people sit in their little pods. And it's very cool. Mm-hmm. And Tanglewood is doing their thing. The BSO opens up on Saturday night, the first Boston Symphony concert, which of course will be played here on WAMC.
Right, and I'll be interviewing Andreas Nelsons today.
Andreas Nelsons, that will be part of our broadcast. You'll hear that interview during the broadcast on Friday morning.
That's right.
And the ballet is coming back to Saratoga.
The ballet is coming back to Spork. Spack. Sorry.
That'll be on my birthday, Alan, some sort of odd
utensil. They're doing kind of a stripped down,
very short, but they're going to be there.
Well, that's all we can. That's good.
Yeah, I get to see them once. Yeah.
We take that. That's all good news.
Cajos Music Hall. I have to say they're coming back. The Palace, the Proctor's.
Cajos Library, I hear, is coming back strong.
The library's closed, right?
The library is temporarily closed.
Oh, I'm sorry. I had some misinformation.
That's all right. You're only a journalist.
It is coming back. It's just going to take time and, you know.
And money.
Money. I just need some money if anyone has money they don't need.
So apropos of absolutely nothing except that we were just momentarily talking about Cajos, but am I right that Billy Bob Thornton is going to be appearing
he's coming to the Cajos Music Hall.
That
is something.
Is weirdly cool, I think.
People seem excited. So
That was a sentence question, a question sentence.
Yeah.
Weirdly cool.
What is he doing?
I don't know. He has
a
group.
He's got a rock band.
Yeah.
Music Hall coming up. Yeah. They're selling tickets.
Yeah. So there you go. That's a get. That's really cool. Good for you.
Yeah. There's music there. There are plays. All sorts of things at the Cajos Music.
And I will just say, if you have not been to the Cajos Music Hall, it is an absolutely gorgeous place. And I know it's looking to be revitalized, and that'll be absolutely gorgeous because it is a beautiful, beautiful place.
Indeed, it is. To see both theater
and music.
What city is it in?
Cajos.
Okay, it's a joke. Yes,
it's not far from the Cajos Falls. Alan, you could do. Have you never been to the Cajos Theater Music Hall?
No.
Oh my!
Plus, Remsen Street has lots of nice places to eat.
Did we
go shopping?
I think Alan and I were there together.
Doing a Cajos commercial.
Yeah, it's on Remsen Street.
Is there an elevator?
Yes,
there is.
Oh yeah, now I remember.
Yeah.
That's the first place I covered when I started after journalism school. No, Cajos.
Cajos has tremendous history.
By the way, ladies and gentlemen, I just want you to know that this is an example of when you lose total control of the show.
Well, you brought up Billy Bob Thornton.
No, I am fully responsible for the loss of control. I just want to point out that I know the error of my ways.
I'm glad to talk about the library if you want.
No, we're good.
Historic building.
But let me move on to this story because we only have a few moments here, 6 minutes or so. So let's talk about Mo Brooks.
What happened to him?
So Mo Brooks is being sued, and he's being sued for inciting the Capitol riot, but he is now claiming that he cannot be sued. He has asked to be dismissed from a federal lawsuit alleging that he incited the January 6th mob assault in the U.S. Capitol, claiming that he can't be held liable because he was acting as a federal employee while challenging the 2020 election results in a fiery speech just before the riot began. Brooks said in a motion Friday that he should be dropped as a defendant or represented by the Justice Department in the case filed March 5th by Representative Eric Swalwell. The lawsuit names former President Donald Trump, Brooks, Donald Trump Jr., Rudolph Giuliani, and seeks damages in connection with their statements to a crowd near the White House that the former president told to march to the Capitol. So the idea here is that if you're a federal employee, you cannot be charged. I would think that would be all the more reason to be charged.
No, the rule is if you're executing your duties, you can't be held responsible for executing your duties. And he's saying inciting the riot, well, he doesn't see it that way, was part of his responsibilities. And Trump is arguing the same thing. And the judge did not throw, did not give a summary judgment, you know, just saying, no, I'm throwing out this challenge. He asked, or she, I can't remember who the judge is, asked for briefs from the small world side. So I think it's an argument that has some standing, that he could win with that.
I'm so relieved. I thought you were talking about Mel Brooks. My all-time hero.
Who just had a birthday. And again, I know.
Not the same as Ringo.
I know we have lost.
You're losing control again, Joe.
I know.
It's slipping.
Yeah, 90 turned 95 on June 28th.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, 95 on June 28th.
I do think Mo Brooks has one of the cooler names in politics, and it's a shame that he's gone off the kind of the deep end, because it's a cool name, Mo Brooks.
Okay, but it doesn't...
Could be a third baseman or something.
But it still makes it difficult, right?
Could be
he
a comedian.
Could be, but he's not. Instead, he's a person who helped, allegedly, incite a riot. And if you look at that, if you look at that footage... Anyone who thinks that's not real needs to spend some time looking at the footage.
Yesterday was the six-month anniversary of the July 6th insurrection. There was some new videotape that was released yesterday from the Department of Justice. It is, I think, as harrowing as the initial footage is. It is awful, especially when you look at statements that have been made in recent weeks about it just being, you know,
a regular tourist
coming in. Yeah, it's very troubling.
No one can say that they support the police if they look at that footage and say that it's not a problem, because it was close up, just beating in vicious, horrible ways.
Yeah,
what humans were doing to each other, and the way the police were being beaten and pummeled in those tapes were just shocking. And to think that that's happening the U.S. Capitol is so stunning to me, having worked there in the 80s and 90s, and just, you know, it's stunning to anyone. It's mind-boggling that happened, that there are people who are trying to dismiss it or rebrand it. It is what it is. It was an insurrection. It was a terrible day in our history, and people need to be held accountable.
So the way that the day was marked in Trump world yesterday was the president re-asking the question of who shot Ashley Babbitt, who was the unarmed Navy veteran who was shot and killed while trying to breach a door in the Capitol. Why has this become the Trump issue, do you think? Rosemary?
Because it makes his argument is that this was a leftist extremist who stole the election and then was trying to portray the insurrection as an insurrection. And so this unarmed supporter was killed by these evil forces. Of course, she was killed by a Capitol policeman. I think Capitol policeman. He's been absolved, yeah.
He's been absolved. And they want the name
job.
To be released, although the person has already been...
disciplined, basically.
But the Trump people, Trump supporters are coming after the officer, knowing the name, are coming after the officer and making threats on the family and so forth. So I know that there's a great deal of effort to try to protect that individual, which seems to be quite problematic.
But let's be clear. If you look at that footage, there's a group of people trying to break down the door to get into the chamber, and the police officers barricaded the door with desks, and they were trying to hold that barricade, and they were yelling to get back, get back, get back. They were told repeatedly to back up, and they did not. What happened, that loss of life is tragic, but you know, when you could see they had their guns, they were made clear that they had their guns drawn, that these insurrectionists were trying to break in, the police were trying to create time so that people could be moved out of the chambers, and you know, and in the process, she tried to breach the door, and they shot, and she was, unfortunately, had stood up on the table or on somebody, you know, sort of, she, it's just a fraction of a moment, and yeah, things could have been different.
There is footage of the moment. It's hard to watch.
Horrible to watch, but it's still, she put herself in that situation. She did not, you know, she was clearly trying to break into that chamber.
We're going to pause. We're going to end there. And I thank you very much for being with us.
Is there a happy note we can end on?
Is there a happy note we can end on? Well, we had a lot of happiness today. Happy birthday, Roselle. That is a happy note.
Yeah.
And again, a reminder, we'll be at Tanglewood on Friday, the day after tomorrow. So that's a happy note. And we'll be back tomorrow. And next, coming up next is Alan's interview with, I believe we start with Paul Tonko today, if I'm not mistaken.
He's fantastic.
Is that correct? Yes. Paul Tonko next. So all of that and more. Alan, thank you very much. Chris Churchill, Rosemary Armeo, Teresa Bourgeois. We appreciate you being here as always. We'll be back right after this.